And we're back, Stripe Show Podcast, on a Monday, back in the saddle here. I'm your host, Travis Fulton. Thank you for making us part of your day. Today's podcast brought to you by About Golf Simulators. I was up with the team yesterday in Minneapolis, where it was snowing. 50 degrees difference by the time I left Florida on Saturday, got off the plane. 50 degrees difference as I pulled into Minneapolis. Snow flurries. Like, what in the hell am I doing up here right now? I live in Florida, but we had a great event up there, a place called Three Jacks, right downtown Minneapolis. And it was the finals of the About Golf Ryder Cup Sim Series, people competing all across the country that brought the top 12 together. And the winner got an all expense trip paid to Rome for the Ryder Cup. I mean, it was pretty cool. This guy was jacked up. And he just got married a couple years ago, and they didn't do a honeymoon, and him and his wife are going to Rome, all expense trip paid by About Golf. So that was really cool. He was fired up, and he put on a good show in hitting a lot of good shots. So back in the saddle here, lots to talk about professional golf, state of the union, if you will. We're going to skin it down, PGA Tour, LIV Golf, et cetera. Bob Herrick joins me again on a Monday. Thank you, sir, for being here. How was your weekend?
Very good, thanks. Appreciate you having me on.
You keeping up with all this professional golf? My goodness, my notes. I was just filling up this pad. The Chevron Championship. Lillian Vu wins the major. Zurich Classic. Davis Riley, Nick Hardy get their first wins. LIV Adelaide in Australia. Taylor Gooch goes 19 under. I didn't even get to see who won PGA Tour Champions. I think it was Hensby and Wee. In a playoff, and who won? Do you know? My head can't explode. All this professional golf, you add it all up. I know you're watching. What's the big takeaway? Who's the big winner, do you think, from the weekend? Is it Liv and that party that we were seeing down under?
Well, I mean, that was you know, I think that was their best event to date. Mm-hmm. I think that's more what they are trying to achieve. I don't know if they were the overall biggest winner. I think the winning a women's major championship, that might be the tops there. It's a big deal, obviously. Mm-hmm. But the LIV experience trots on, and they've taken it, you know, halfway around the world, which is really where probably their biggest growth potential is. So I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit. You know, I have a sense that they're pretty stoked after that week. You know, no matter what everybody else thinks of it, that was a little bit more of what they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, I agree. I think their identity in many ways is starting to come to fruition. And they're certainly going to lean into their identity. I think they're going to continue to push past their identity and try to get all things, you know, and try to be all things to all consumers in the end. We'll get to that here in a second, but let's go back stateside for a second. I caught the end of the Zurich Classic. Davis Riley, Nick Hardy getting the win, shooting 30 under par. And I like that event. It's different. There's a lot of tournaments, of course, on the PGA Tour. We're now in a position where we have to think elevated versus non-elevated. We've seen a number of elevated events, Bob. We've seen a number of non-elevated events. When you kind of look back here on the season, how do you think things are going for the PGA Tour? Do they sit in their boardroom here this morning and feel pretty good about how elevated versus non-elevated is playing out?
I would sense that they do feel good about it, with room for improvement. You know, it was going to be a situation where they were going to endure some growing pains this year as they tried to figure things out. Remember, they put this together very quickly and had to really scramble to make it work. And, you know, I think a big indicator is that all of the designated events so far year over year have been up in the ratings. I think mm-hmm. there is a want for, golf fans to see the best players competing together more often. Now you could argue, well, we sort of had that with the World Golf events. Yeah, but they were separate events. They were different from the existing events. Also, and we can probably get into this too, is I think the no cut aspect of them took away from them. And that's where the tour is going to dive into some dicey territory, I think, if they make all of these no cut events. This year, you know, they've been the traditional events with cuts. Mm-hmm. Riviera, Phoenix, Hilton Head. All those tournaments were really good, but they were enhanced because we knew that basically a majority of the top players were there. And, you know, so I think the tour's got something there and they've got something to build on.
Yeah, you know, I think this has been the direction, at least in my eyes, and we've been talking on the podcast about this for the better part of a year and a half, 2 years, is that the old model and just continuing to run out another tournament in the fall, filling this thing up to 46 events, whatever it was, things got watered down. And I just didn't think the tour was leading with its stars enough. And so I look at it, I've absolutely have thoroughly enjoyed the elevated events. And I think it's the right direction. I think Rory, although has become the punching bag here as of late, because he did miss a second elevated event, and deservedly so, I guess. Hopefully nothing serious is happening and the reason why he had missed. But, you know, he's been out in the front of this and in the face of this and very much having to articulate it to the public, but also to players. And I'm sure that's exhausting through this. So although, yeah, he missed his second and it's not a great look, albeit I think Rory out in front once again articulating is right in that this is the right direction to go for the PGA Tour. Because I agree, I think, yeah, there's room for improvement, but these elevated events have been a slam dunk. I also think, you know, you go into this week with Zurich, or last week with Zurich, this week with Mexico, it's a non-elevated event. You kind of know that, right? So you're kind of prepped for that. You're ready for that. And I think there's room for growth when it comes to the non-elevated side. I like maybe some of these different formats that you might maybe see in the future. They might be able to try a few things in some of the non-elevated events. Certainly at Zurich, it's unique. And this team competition, I enjoy it.
Yeah, you know, these weeks, this is the traditional Masters lull right now. Where you get a little Masters hangover for a couple of weeks. There's such a buildup. So many good tournaments leading up to the Masters. Think about it, you know, Genesis and then mm-hmm. Bay Hill and the Players. And then, you know, we had a match play, which is going to go away, but still and then the Masters, these guys are playing a lot of golf leading up to that. And everybody sort of exhales now. So these two events, Zurich and Mexico this week, are kind of what they've always been. Yeah. They're not designated events, but you know, the trick now is for the tour to convince guys to play some of these other tournaments that are not designated. Like Jon Rahm's playing this week. He won it last year. My yep. guess is typically he wouldn't do it. He's skipping Wells Fargo next week, a designated event, because he's playing this week and he doesn't want to run himself out of gas before the PGA. These are some of the things they need to sort of address and figure that out. On the other side, if this were the same schedule next year, exactly, it's not. Mexico's moving earlier. But if this were the same schedule, in theory, New Orleans and Mexico would be mini qualifying events for Quail Hollow. They're gonna have these little stretches where they take the top five in FedEx points, not already qualified, from a small segment of events to get you into the next one. So if you're, let's say you were a guy who just didn't make it, but you were, you know, whatever, you weren't in the top 50 and you hadn't won a tournament this year and you weren't top 10 in FedEx points for the year, here's your chance. You know, here's your chance to get in. And so you play well in these two events and you get in there. So that's what the sales job is going to go next year for the non-designated events. They're obviously you win those tournaments, you get in the Masters, you get all the perks, but also there's the opportunity to get into the next big one.
What a difference a year makes for Jon Rahm. This time last year, when he goes into Mexico, everybody was wondering why he was playing. He was just trying to get his game back together as his short game and his putting really fell apart. And now he goes into this year and he's basically won everything he looks at. And if he didn't, then Scotty did. So it's he certainly got his game together. He'll be the defending champ this week in Mexico. And then to your point, Wells Fargo, which will be great. An elevated event. And then they go non-elevated to AT&T Byron Nelson. Then, of course, the PGA Championship, where they get the boys back together from all over the world. Let me ask you this. As you look at how all of this has played out, and you listen to the questions that are being asked to the players in the way that they are conveying the message of elevated versus not elevated. And I think everybody understands that you can't please everybody, right? I mean, it's just, it's impossible in any line of business to set a direction forward that's going to please absolutely everybody and see it the right way. And through this time of elevated versus non-elevated, of course, the competitor in the room, LIV, and some of the momentum that they've been able to create over the last year, do you think the commissioner, Bob, Jay Monahan, should be more visible during this time? Because the one thing you can say on Liv's side with Greg Norman is he is visible. I mean, he is out there and he's talking and he's sitting there and you kind of know where he stands most of the time. Is it fair to say that Jay probably needs to be more visible right now and maybe take on more of these questions week in and week out and take some of the pressure off of a Rory McIlroy, off of a Jordan Spieth, who are fielding these questions every single week and happen to be the voice collectively for the tour?
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to look at it. I mean, I think Jay's visible to the players.
Yeah.
You know, he's at most events and he's there to talk to them at least for a day or two and get their feedback and give them his. But I think in terms of the public, it might not be the worst thing. You know, yeah, he's not that available. I mean, look, that's just the nature of the job. I mean, it wasn't like Tim Fincham was available to the media every week either. Right. But I think as this plays out, you know, and when changes are made, at some point we're going to find out what the four events are next year. We don't know. You know, the four designated events that are outside of the Century and the three legacy events. We don't know what they are. We think it's going to probably be Phoenix again, possibly, and it might be MCI again, or RBC Heritage, but we don't know for sure. Mm-hmm. And it's when that happens, I think, you know, it'd be good for Jay to be out front and explain it. And if they don't go to no cuts, if they don't institute a cut in some of these, I think they need to talk about it. I mean, mm-hmm. Let's be honest. One of the big knocks on Liv is that they don't have a cut. PGA Tour people have you know, mocked them for that. Well, now you're going to put in eight tournaments that don't have one either, you know, and then you throw in the three playoff events that won't. Of course, you have to qualify for those. But in any case, sure, I think it would be good if he's – and now, look, that's – I'm being selfish too. You know, I'm a media guy, yeah, and we'd love to have access to Jay. I mean, he's got his reasons. I'm not saying this is awful that he's not, but if you're asking me the question, could he be out front a little bit more? Sure. You're right. These players get this every week. Rom, Rory, JT, Spieth, Homa, you know, and I could see where it gets tiring. Sometimes they go to a new market where people haven't had a chance to talk to them about this, so they're going to get it again.
I mean, show me another sport right now, another top-end athlete in basketball, football, whatever, that's having to field all of these questions every single week when it comes to the direction of the PGA Tour, when it comes to the competitor of Liv Golf, when it comes to whether or not you're going to roll the golf ball back, to whether or not, I mean, there's a list of three or four things that you're just getting peppered with every single week. And then it's like, oh yeah, by the way, how's your game coming into this week? You know, I mean, by the time you get to that, you're just like annoyed. I would think as a player, it just doesn't happen. There's no athlete out there that's taking the bulk of what's happening in the professional game over and over and over again. Of course, it's going to have an effect on you. You're a human being. And I just feel like someone there could be taking some of this pressure off. Hey, ask the question to me. as a representative of the PGA Tour, and let me articulate, you know, collectively how we feel about this. And then I think it takes a little bit of air out, you know, and relief out from the player's perspective. I don't know that, you know, I don't have Rory texting me that or Spieth texting me. Yeah. God, it'd be nice to have you. That's just my outside looking in, you know, that's just me.
I see on that. I think there's some merit to that. It's been a tumultuous time, and you know, this is big change in the game. That's why I sort of chuckle at people who wonder why we even talk about it or don't criticize or do criticize or what have you. I'm like, what are you talking about? I mean, three guys who just finished in the top five at the Masters have gone to this rival league.
Sure.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's been incredibly disruptive. You know, you've got a Hall of Famer in Phil who, you know, is fan favorite for three decades, you know, made this momentous decision, whether you agree with it or not, it's changed things. And of course we're going to discuss it and write about it and all these things. That doesn't mean you condone it. That doesn't mean that they're all doing everything correct, but it's there, it's happening, you know, and you know, to try to ignore it is very difficult.
Well, let's talk about it, because they were down in Australia, and you know, I watch bits and pieces of it. I always do every single week. I do think there's some entertainment value there as watching it. Is it serious golf? Is it the way that I want professional golf to look and feel in establishing our best players? No. But when you look at what transpired down in Australia this week, Cam Smith, of course, going back, Greg Norman, of course, an Australian, Mark Leishman, they have their own team. This is an area that's starving for professional golf. The PGA Tour has never made its way down there and through some of its efforts internationally. You know, if I'm sitting in the boardroom at LIV Golf and I look back at what just transpired there with all those people, I think you feel really good about, wow, we just took a huge step forward with our best event in Australia.
Yeah. I mean, listen, from their standpoint, I think it reaffirms that they need to go to underserved golf markets. And they tried that a little bit in the US. And I think that part of their issue is they were just getting started and that hurt them. They limited themselves a little bit, but they went to Portland last year. They don't have a men's professional golf tournament.
Right.
You know, they're going to Tulsa this year, which did really well for the PGA Championship last year, but they don't have a regular tour stop. That's probably a good idea. DC, yep. The same thing, you know, I'm not sure going to Mayakoba is going to help them much, because it's a resort area that's not in a huge population base. I'm not sure going to London's going to help them much. We'll see. It's the second time there. We'll see if it gets a little bit more traction, but Spain might be really good for them. Yeah. And then there's markets in the US, like, you know, Chicago doesn't have an annual tour stop now anymore, although the BMW will be there this year. It might as well be in another state. It's so far away from where LIV is playing, though. And they went to Boston last year, which no longer has a tour stop. Miami doesn't have a tour stop. It's smart to go to these markets.
Yep.
Now, can they improve of stuff? You know, you were just talking about, you know, is it professional? Does it? I think they need to sort of extol the fact that, look, we're different. We're not going to be like the PGA Tour. We don't have a problem with the PGA Tour, but this is something different. We're offering up something different, and go down that tack. Don't say it's better. Just say it's different.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because I don't know that it's better. I think it's a matter of taste, you know, like you said. I mean, getting used to the shorts and the music. By the way, the music that you hear on the broadcast is not throughout the course. It's only on a couple of holes. But for whatever reason, wherever that broadcast tower is where the music is playing. I find it to be a little bit distracting when I've watched. You know, I mean, there's things like that they need to button up. You know, the other day when they put all the teams all the guys together in teams. Well, you know, if you're serious about golf, if you're seriously playing an individual stroke play event, the last thing you want, especially after what happened at the Masters, is to have a situation where teammates are playing together. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not suggesting that anything went awry, but you open the door for that. You can't mm-hmm. give advice in an individual event. So, like, even though they're teammates, you can't do it there. You know, so, like, that was a miss, I thought. I got what they were trying to do. They wanted to have all the Aussies in one group. Mm-hmm. The three guys, the captains all played with each other, but then the three of all the other teams were made up the same group the first day. It's kind of cool, I guess, in a way, the teams all together. Like, it has the potential to hurt their credibility if you're not careful with something like that.
Well, that's just it. You can't – I think they're trying to be all things to all people. Yeah. I don't think they're going to tell you that, but – that's what they're trying to do, right? I mean, they're like, yeah, we don't really – yeah, we want to go to places like Australia and things like that and grow the game, and the U.S. audience is maybe down – they want to grow the U.S. audience. I mean, a lot of their events sure. are here. So they're trying to do a lot of different things. And I think the reality is I think what you said about being different really is the identity of LIV Golf. It is an entertainment. It is an entertainment product. Mm-hmm. Right. And what you saw in Australia is entertainment. That was entertainment. And so yeah. if that's what you're after, then, okay, maybe you can bend on a few rules here and there. But then you can't say, well, this is then going to compete with the PGA Tour on a serious level. And we want to get all the official World Golf ranking points and all this because that's who we are. But yet it's an entertainment product and we're going to kind of bend rules here and there because we want to make it more entertaining for our guests. And we're going to lead with the social aspect. And it's, you know, it's not going to be that serious, right? And it's very much an exhibition. And as I call it, it's like a circus with a golf tournament running through it. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. Like, I want to be entertained too. And I do have a little bit of taste for that as a fan. But it's not the way that I want to rule out serious golf, you know, and try to establish the best players over a course of time. That's just kind of where I fall right. on it. Is that consistent with where you are?
Yeah, I mean, they've been accused of being an exhibition, and I guess my retort to that is well, what is an exhibition? All right, the tournaments don't have any meaning. All right, well, I mean, they do have a season long points list. They do have a mm-hmm. season long bonus pool for their winner. I mean, they do have meaning within their sphere. They don't get world ranking points. If they were to get world ranking points, it suddenly becomes a little bit more important because then they matter within the world golf stage. Right now, they don't. They're just right. their own entity. But I mean, like, is any tournament outside of a major in the Players' Championship really anything more than an exhibition? Is this event, week's event in Mexico? I mean, on its own, it's just one of, you know, 34 events in the regular season or 34 weeks and one of 45 or whatever. It doesn't really have a whole lot of meaning. Yes, but yet the players who compete in it, it has meaning. They earn points. You know, if you win, you get in the Masters if you're not already in. So in that regard, it's a heck of a lot more than an exhibition. So I think, you know, it's just a matter of – I think people who don't like LIV have tried to find ways to disparage it, and so they call it an exhibition. Yeah. You know, it doesn't mean anything. Well, I mean, it might not mean anything to you. And right. I get that, but I think it has meaning to those guys. The mm-hmm. other thing I hear a lot is, well, you know, they got paid up front. You know, they don't care. The reason I push back on that is every other athlete in professional sports has a guaranteed contract for the most part. Yep. They don't care. You think Steph Curry doesn't care when he goes out? Of course, he's a competitor. These guys are competitors. I've been to a bunch of LIV events. They work hard on their games. They don't like it when they shoot 75. They're mad at themselves. You know, they want to play well. So mm-hmm. I keep pointing out LIV has plenty of other flaws to pick on besides some of those ones that people want to choose. I don't think those are the issue. I think they have other issues. And, you know, we've discussed a couple of them here. They can improve. They have way they have the ability to change on the fly, unlike the PGA Tour, you know, which has to vet things and it takes a little while to get things done. If LIV wanted tomorrow, this week, they could have a cut, for example. they could have a cut. They could have a cut in Singapore. If they wanted, they could have a qualifier this week and add a 13th team. They just do it. You know, right. They could just do it. See, these are things that I think they need to do to legitimize themselves a little bit more. And maybe they will someday.
Does the rubber hit the road with them when these 3-year contracts are up with these players? You know, like,
yeah,
you know, I mean, yeah. Isn't that really what we're at here? Because like all these guys are under contract. They got paid a boatload of money and they're going to say and do whatever they want them to do. And that, and right. And we've seen that. And so, all right, we're a year and a half in. There's a year and a half to go on these contracts.
Some, well, we don't know exactly. See, like some of them are four. Some of them might be three. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm pretty sure like the Phils, DJs, Brooks, those guys are four.
So maybe it's four. So you got some threes and fours coming up, right? So let's say some of these contracts are going to come up. And where is Liv at that point? And so now the legitimacy of this tour, right? At the end of the day is you've got to have some name value people. You just do. Like you got to have the Dustins. You got to have Bryson, who's still not, you know, hasn't been playing great. I get that. But you got to have some name value for people to show up. I mean, is Australia that party without Cam Smith? Probably not. You know, you got to have some name value players. So these contracts come up. All right. Are you going to re-ante up for these guys or they're like, you know, you're offering me this, but I can go make this on the PGA Tour. And, you know, maybe we're in a different spot with the PGA Tour at that point. I don't know. I think that's where the rubber hits the road with them and whether or not they're going to keep ponying up for the legitimacy of these name guys to be playing in it. Because if they don't, then what do you have at that point? I think that's really where things start to hit the road here. And of course, official World Golf rankings and whether or not they get that is going to be part of it too.
Yeah. I mean, the contract thing is interesting because they won't disclose the length.
Right.
And, you know, they claim, well, they're not claiming, they are going to have a, what they call a promotions event at the end of the year. And the bottom four players are allegedly supposed to be relegated. But if you have a contract, you won't be relegated. I liken that to a guy who, let's say he won on the PGA Tour last year, but he finishes 130th in FedEx points this year. He's not booted off the tour because he has a 2-year exemption. If you have a 2-year contract, you're not booted off a LIV. The difference is we know that on the PGA Tour. We don't know that with them. It would be a lot more exciting if you knew who the bottom four guys are who are in peril. You know, and then they're supposed to take three from their promotions event, one from the international series. Having a little bit more turnover and the ability to have more turnover, especially as these contracts expire, would be intriguing for them. That creates interest. You know, now I'm guessing some of these guys would be brought back. I can't imagine that they wouldn't want to have Bryson and Brooks back. You know, but there's some other guys who have contracts that maybe that we don't talk about as much. And if they don't finish in the top 24, which is guarantees you a spot back, then they might just be gone. Yeah. You know, apparently these team captains are going to have the ability to pick and choose guys that they want. And so, but I think they need to hammer on that a little bit more because that's where the intrigue and the interest is. You know, right now the teams are locked. We know nothing's really changing. And that was a big thing last year. We didn't know who was going. Now there's none of that intrigue associated with it. They have to make it on their own.
Do you take Greg's at face value when he says that they have, you know, I think it was a dozen names that are ready to sign on? You take him at face value there that there's guys lined up ready to make the switch right now and there are names that you and I would know?
My sense is there's a little bit of hyperbole there. I wouldn't be surprised if they've had inquiries, you know, several inquiries. Yeah. It's hard for me to believe, though, at this point that anybody who's a top 20, 25, 30 player who didn't already go to LIV is thinking about it with all these enhancements on the tour. You know, they're it might not be LIV money, but they're set up to really, really be taken care of. I think where they might have an opportunity is, you know, we're not hearing about it as much, but there's certainly some disgruntled PGA Tour players over the new setup.
Sure.
You know, the haves, have nots, you know, possibility that exists. If you're outside that top 50 in FedEx points at the end of this year, and you haven't won a tournament, you know, you're going to be playing in, I don't want to say lower level events. I mean, they're very good events, but you're not going to be playing for as much money and you're not going to be playing for as many points. And so it's an uphill battle to get to the tour championship or get to the playoffs. It's not a one-to-one thing. Those guys are playing for a 700 points to the winner, and we're playing for 500, you know, and all the way down the list. Now, of course, like we talked about earlier, there is the opportunity to play your way into some of these designated events, but then you're going to be exhausted. Mm-hmm. You know, like that example I gave earlier where you, let's say you do well in New Orleans, you do well in Mexico. Okay, now you get in Quail Hollow. Great. Now you're in Quail Hollow. Well, if you don't do enough then to make sure you're in the next designated event, well, does that mean you go to Dallas? You know, what if you're in the PGA Championship? It's like you're not going to not play there. So, like I said earlier, I think there's some growing pains with all of this that they need to work through. And but there's the possibility there's some disgruntled middle-level PGA Tour players who might look a little harder at LIV now, because instead of beating their heads against the wall, like why not go take an upfront payment a little bit and then get to play for a minimum amount every single week?
Yeah, that's the appeal, right? I mean, is that you're getting the money up front, and how much of that is LIV willing to spend now? Because I think we understand that a lot of that has dried up, right? As far as some of that money up front and that was being thrown around to get a lot of these big names over. And so now that they're starting to get a little more established, their identity and some money coming in from ticket sales and this and that, and all of a sudden you're getting excited with that. Well, now do I need to pay people to come over? Well, I think you do. I mean, I think the only way that you're going to continue to get these guys to come over is, well, show me the money. You know, I mean, that's the bottom line. That's the difference. And if some of that starts to dry up, then the conversations get a little more difficult, especially with some of these bigger names that are going to be discussing and wanting to be renewed, which, okay, 4 years. All right. You're year two into it. I would think some of those discussions would start if you're a 3-year contract and now you're 2 years into your contract, some of those discussions are going to start pretty soon what that looks like for the future.
My understanding of it is it's all going to be up to the teams. So
yeah, which is like, interesting, no, right?
They have not, you know, they have not really enunciated this real clearly, but in theory, Dustin Johnson's Four Aces team, if he wants to keep, let's say Patrick Reed, like it's going to be up to the Four Aces to make that work for Patrick Reed. That's my understanding. Now the captains themselves, how does that work? They've already been given an equity stake in these franchises. If we go beyond 3 or 4 years or whatever they're contracted for, and these guys do not have a owner for their team, does LIV then pony up more money to keep them on board? I mean, these are the things that are sort of like unclear, right?
Yeah.
Like a guy like Dustin, you know, Dustin Johnson, you know, he's in theory, he's the captain of that team. He's been given a 25% stake in the Four Aces. Whenever that team is sold, he allegedly gets 25% of the sales price. That could potentially be a lot of money. So, you know, but what if they don't sell it in the first 4 years? I mean, there's no guarantee these teams are going to sell anytime soon. It's a long process. So there's a lot to come with all of this, a lot of inside baseball type of stuff. And it'll be interesting to see how it works out, because like you said, I think they need to bring some name players over. They need to keep, churning new guys in there to keep up the interest.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I think the money has to continue to spend. I think if you're going to filter out that bottom, right, and get some turnover and replace it with, I just think there's more money to be spent here on their side. And look, they probably have all the money in the world. We know that. But the question is whether or not they're going to continue to spend it as they've cut back, as we've seen on some other areas. Look, I think there's some entertainment value there. I do. I watch it. I'll probably go to an event here at some point. I like to lead with the social aspect as well. I like to play casual golf. I like Top Golf, you know, and what that means to the game. And so I think that identity of what they're starting to create, which is this social atmosphere, and what all of that entails, and going over the top with the music and the social media and all that. Well, maybe that is good for the game. Maybe that is what the next generation wants. Do I want that to be what professional golf completely looks like and establishing the best players? I don't. But what is the balance in that? I don't think we know the answer to that and what right. That's going to look like in the next 15 to 20 years. I do know this. I do think there's just a lot more money to spend for them to see this through, you know, and what's going to happen here as they filter out that bottom, bring in the next half dozen people, and then renew these contracts. There's a lot more money yet to be spent here. It just feels that way to me. Like, I just don't think that upfront is going to dry up and you have the same product that's flourishing moving forward. Singapore, I don't think will be quite like Australia.
No.
You know, I've been to Singapore and I don't think that'll have quite the same feel, but I do think it'll be interesting when it gets to Tulsa and what this U.S. audience and how much they sign up for it and what that looks and feels like. So, all right. Well, that's that. We're only into May 1st, PGA Championship coming up. Any early leans? Anybody you like there? No Tiger? Man, Bob, I don't want to say I think we've heard the last from Tiger, but I just feel like we've heard the last from Tiger. I think he'll battle back and play, but man, you're telling me this guy and all this pain and now the foot and a battle back and play limited events and show up at a major and win in today's game? I just don't see it.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, it gets harder and harder now. You know, this means, I mean, the thing that we keep forgetting is you know, not only is he unable to play and compete because of what he's going through, but he can't work on his craft.
Yeah.
You know, you have to work on your game to be able to compete with the best. And he is, you know, he's now, you were looking at what, 3, 4, 5 months possibly about without him picking up a club. It depends. You know, I mean, there's been different theories on how long he's going to be, you know, have to mm-hmm. sit down. You know, I guess where I give him some hope is that this surgery is kind of like, obviously it's not like back surgery, but it's similar in theory to the fusion he had on his back. That was kind of a last resort. Like, they tried to do other things, so they didn't want to do that because the fusion was going to mean limited mobility. And there was no guarantee that he was going to be able to function at a high level after that, where he was hoping to avoid it. But what it did was it alleviated pain and it gave him stability in that lower back. Well, look at what he did. He won 3 times after that. It's incredible still to this day to think what he accomplished. He got to number 6 in the world after having been outside of the top 1,000. You know, just I don't think you can overstate how incredible that was, that part yeah. of his comeback. Now, this is in a weird sort of way, it's similar. It's another fusion, 2 bones fused in his foot. It's going to limit his mobility. He's going to have less flexibility, but he's going to have more stability and in theory, and apparently less pain. Like, it's this throbbing pain that he always has is going to dissipate. Now, thankfully, it's his right foot. All the experts say there's no way this could work for him as a right-handed golfer if it were his left, because of the movement that your left foot needs to make.
Yep.
But on the right side is possible. Now, okay, what does that mean? Is he able to walk properly, though? Like, is he able to walk without pain?
Yeah.
I think we've seen that Tiger can stand up and hit golf shots. He's hit plenty of good ones with this, with all the things that have gone on to his right leg and foot. But he can't get to the ball enough times to last. It wears down. Mm-hmm. And so will this allow for that? Will this allow for him to practice, you know, practice walking even, you know, walking 18 holes in preparation? You know, it was interesting. I talked to Joe LaCav at the Masters. I think it was after Tiger's first round. And he said, yeah, I went down to visit with them last week and we worked together. And I said, did you walk 18 holes? And he goes, no. He goes, we were on the cart and off the cart, on the cart. He said, we didn't want to overdo it. We didn't want to push it too hard. So the week before the Masters, Tiger never walked 18 holes. You know, and then, of course, he never walked 18 holes until the first round. I think going forward, he's going to need to be able to do that a little bit more often and also probably add some events. Yeah. How are you competitive in the hardest tournaments?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's just it. I mean, in today's game and how good these guys are and the depth, you need reps. I know it's Tiger Woods. He comes back. He's going to be, at that point, what, 47? Here soon, and he's 47 now. He's 46 now, and
yeah, no, he's 47. He's 47 now.
Now he's gonna be 48. He's gonna be 48 here in December. I mean, you can't rule him out. You know, it's Tiger Woods. I get it, but it just feels the mountain's just too big, right? You got to get reps. You got to get out there and compete. And when you show up, this is the first time you walk 18 holes.
Yeah,
play it. Now, it just feels like too big of a mountain in today's game. All right, Bob, I'll let you go. Bob Herrick with Sports Illustrated. Check his book out, Tiger and Phil's Golf's Most Fascinating Rivalry. Speaking of Tiger and Phil, right? You wrote a book on it. Go check that out. Bob, thanks so much for joining
us here on the pod. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right.